If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Testing, testing, hot out, bound car, 1, 2, 3, 4, testing, testing. Hey, boss, you know, Ralph, I'm getting a little nervous out here. I don't know how you can keep so calm back there.
Get ready. 10 seconds. 5 seconds. Go.
Hey, I can't find nothing on the radio. Yo, turn to that station.
Your one definition of a friend is someone who's there when you need him. Well, I needed him, and he's here. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend Elton.
Jim.
I'm back. Good morning. Elton Jim Toronto with you here at WGN. Filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. Going until 5. Hope you'll do the ride with me, you vampires. This is the vampire shift, the vampires of the night. It's not the night, though, actually. Or is it? I don't know. This shift plays so many games with your body clock. All I know is I'm on until 5 a.m. Whether it's nighttime, morning time, you figure it out. I'm glad you're here. I'm excited and always excited to be here. Sitting in my favorite Star Trek chair in the WGN Showcase Studio, the Allstate Showcase Studio, looking out on a beautiful Michigan Avenue. Actually, more cars than I would expect are zipping by. This has been a great winter here. Usually, I mean, winter is officially gone, but usually at this time of the night, it's kind of dead, but the weather has been surprisingly mild since last year. And so it's nice to see actually people walking around here at 2 a.m. I don't know what they're up to.
Drinking.
Yeah, no kidding. I didn't say they were walking straight.
Right.
But they are walking.
It's got to be somewhat entertaining to sit there and watch them go by.
I love this. I've always said, especially when I worked here in the afternoon, I mean, this is the greatest office view in the city. I know it's not high. It's not, you know, above the city, but you get to look people straight in the eye, and especially we get a chance to talk to them if they ever come by.
It's not high, but they are.
Ooh. All right. That's the voice of Laura Vaughn, who's going to be adding all of our psychedelic drug reference humor.
Oh.
For the next 3 hours. I've never worked with you, but I'm pleased to that you're up there, and I'm glad that you're jumping in.
Well, this is my first day doing this.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. First time.
Oh.
I'm a virgin.
Well,
I was.
Well, I will be gentle at the beginning.
Thank you.
But then look out. And the rest, you can just make that. You could just decide what I mean by
sure.
that. But please, by all means, join in. I always enjoy talking to folks. If you've got anything to say out there, 312-981-7200. My name is Elton Jim Toronto, and as I said, I'll be here until to 5 a.m. I'm very excited, but I'm a little, I'll tell you, I thought I would do this at the outset of the show because I think it's important. I haven't told anybody this, and it's been not an easy thing to actually admit. I mean, my nickname is Elton Jim, based on the fact that I am a huge Elton John fan. I've seen him in concert 163 times, including the show last week in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I've been a fan for over 45 years. I've met him several times. I've written 8 of his official programs at his for his concert tours. I own a pair of his glasses. I own a pair of his stage jacket. I mean, I've got memorabilia. I was on a show called Fan Club on VH1 several years ago, and they highlighted me. So needless to say, I think I've earned this nickname. And when I was in Grand Rapids last week, right in the middle of the show somewhere, can't remember where it was, I think it was right in the middle of Sad Songs Say So Much, something like a switch went off. And it was odd. I was suddenly going through the motions. It was strange. I never had this feeling before. at an Elton John concert, because, I mean, I've gone to plenty of Elton John concerts, and I still would always get goosebumps like the first time, and that's what always keeps me going back. And this time it was, something happened, and it was strange, and the show was good, and I stayed till the end, and fine, and I came back home, and a couple days later, I put on an Elton John album, just, you know, in the car or at home, and, you know, it wasn't doing it for me. And I was like, this is a strange feeling, because, I mean, this has been a major part of my life since I was 9 years old or so. And suddenly, I wasn't getting it. I wasn't getting it. And it's been like this for like a week now. I've sort of been in a funk. And I, you know, it's been a very weird transition for me because I'm not used to this. So I think I'm going to make the pronouncement that, as difficult as this is to say, I think, you know, I might just drop this Elton Jim nickname. It's been a cool name. I've enjoyed it. But if I'm not feeling it, then I don't really know I should be using it. And I don't know if I still like his music, but I just don't feel I'm like that diehard fan anymore. And it's a very weird feeling. And I don't know if you've gone through this, anyone out there, that you've liked something for a long time. Maybe this is what happens in a marriage when you sort of decide that you've fallen out of love or something. I don't know, but I've never experienced this, so it's been a little strange. But I have this forum here, and because I am known as Elton Jim on the radio, I thought it would be best that the people that listen to me and to any extent be the first ones to know that. So I'm just saying today that from now on, I'm Jim Toronto, and I'll talk about Elton John, or I'll still listen to his music, but something happened. A switch went off. I don't know why. So anyway, we've got some interesting April Fools! Oh, come on.
Whoa, it's the second. You got to
stop. Oh, it's only that. 2 hours after. Give me a break. Did you honestly think that I could not be an Elton John fan, folks?
That was so sad. Sad like sad songs.
Sad songs say so much. You know what? I'm not one to prank. I don't like pranks. I don't do, you know, like wacky phone call stuff. And I've never been a prankster.
I can tell you don't have a lot of experience with pranks.
Yeah, no, really. I don't like the lame. I was shocked today. I was watching the WGN news at 9 o'clock. And the last 5 minutes, they ran a huge, for TV news, a 5 minute segment, which is a lot.
That's a long time.
They ran, I guess now for April Fools, it's not just enough that your local prankster or your friend or your sibling or whatever plays a joke on you, but now major corporations, McDonald's, Google, Pepsi, major corporations are all putting out fake press releases and fake commercials on the web for products that, you know, are completely false, but they're trying to get you for April Fools. And some of these are very elaborate, and I'm thinking, we wonder why we're falling behind economically? You know how much time and effort was put into all these? When did corporations start to play pranks on the public? I understand you try to have this cool hipster image, but you get down to business. Don't worry about, hey, I've got this really cool April Fool's Day idea. Why don't you find a real idea for your product to help sell it in the real world? Don't worry about pranks. Worry about the real bottom line. And as I said, I sat at home and I thought, well, this might be, you know, should I do something for April Fool's Day? It's not officially, but yet it sort of is. I mean, we're only 2 hours away. And I figured, well, this could be kind of funny. I do this Elton John thing and Elton Jim thing. So did you fall for it, Laura? Because you don't know who the heck I even am.
Well, yeah, of course I did.
See, there you go. Well, that's good. So I got you.
Yeah.
I'm not, as I said, when I was in grammar school, I always prided myself on the fact that I made the teachers laugh. I wasn't like the class clown. I wasn't making faces. I wasn't making those noises when you put your hand under your arm. You know, and I wasn't that kind of class clown. I was like the Dick Cavett. In my class, I was always telling the joke that worked on several levers. My friends didn't think I was funny, but my teachers did.
Yeah,
yeah. So I always prided myself that I could make older people laugh. Mm-hmm. But so I've never been into the April Fool's prank either in publicly or privately. But
how do you feel about getting pranked?
I don't mind. I think I have a pretty good sense of humor on that. I mean, I've never, I'm trying to think if I've ever even been April Fooled. Have you ever been April Fooled?
Well, I mean,
aside from tonight,
you know, there's something on your shirt, you know. That
oh, yeah.
Stuff.
Oh,
sure,
believe me.
Sure, yeah.
I fall for the what's on your shirt with the finger into your nose.
Yeah.
I
yeah.
fall for that every time.
I do because I never always have something on my ledge, you know, because I'm a sloppy eater. And
well, so
I assume
I.
there really is.
Yes. So isn't that funny? So am I. I mean, there never there does, a day doesn't go by where you can tell exactly what I had for lunch or for dinner. And so to your point, I am always self-conscious that there is something on my shirt. So when someone. Yeah. I get a bib even when I'm not eating lobster. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, if you want to give me a great Christmas gift. Hey, now there's an idea. How about adult bibs?
There are adult bibs.
Are there?
But they're really not for people our age.
Well, this is my point.
They're for people that are really old.
Oh, the, you're talking about that bib.
That kind of
oh,
like a
that
big,
bib.
Giant. It's a huge oh, I've, no, rubber-backed.
Yeah,
no,
I've seen that bib.
It's awkward.
I don't want that bib.
No,
yes.
Me neither.
No, no.
It's would degrading.
No, it'd be cool to have like a Simpsons bib for an adult.
I guess.
You know, or
sure.
something, or anything, whatever you, whatever. Whatever reference you might like, or but I mean, I could use a bib.
I need like a towel with like a hole in it, and I can just
right.
put it over my head and
yes.
just cover
I need,
the whole area.
I need a hazmat suit when I eat. Forget about over the shoulder, because yeah. I got news for you: my shoes and my pants are also attacked because
everybody.
It falls off the fork.
Mm-hmm.
It hits the chest and then rebounds either to the lap or directly to the floor.
Do you have a dog?
No. No.
Oh, you would have your dog would be your.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
well, believe
be your
me,
buddy.
He'd weigh about 700 pounds.
Because, just from your
yeah,
scraps.
Yeah. He'd say, "Oh, it's time to eat." Oh, are you eating too? I'll be there in a minute.
Sure.
Oh yeah. No, believe me. I am. I don't know why. You know, my mom was kind of a messy eater, and it was funny.
Genetic.
I,
okay.
I guess I don't know if that's genetic, but it must be. The funny thing is, when I was growing up. I would stay over. I didn't have any brothers or sisters, so I stayed over by a certain cousin of mine all the time. We were around the same age. And so I stayed over by their house quite a bit when I was younger. And so we would have breakfast or lunch the next morning. And I don't know. I guess I must eat. I mean, I certainly use utensils, okay? I'm not a caveman. But I okay. must use my fingers as well to do something in the process of eating because my fingers get greasy. And so my aunt, whenever the meal was done, she would always say, you know, she would have like a glass, like a clear glass that had milk or water in it, whatever it was. And she always say, well, there's Jim's glass. Because it was just, it was fingerprinted and cloudy. And just at Easter, my wife had, we had Easter at our house for some family. And my wife found these little like eggs that were made, they're black. They're actually made of like chalkboard material so that you can write people's names on them or little phrases and use them as placemats or,
what a great investment.
Or name tags, and then you can wipe them off the next day
mm-hmm.
and use them again because they just use chalk, and they're kind of cool, and it's kind of it's odd to see a black egg too.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of a neat look, and yet, like I said, you could use these every year. So we didn't have chalk this year for some reason, and this thing doesn't come with chalk, which is, I think, kind of goofy. So we used a grease pencil, and she drew everybody's name, and she like drew little rabbits out of people's names. She's very artistic.
Oh, that's adorable.
Yeah, she's very artistic. So she did that. So we're at the dinner, and you know, everybody had their egg on their plate to begin the dinner. So I move it, and so then as the time went on, and we were talking, I was playing with the egg, you know, just kind of rolling it around in my hands and you know playing with it. I'm always fidgety, and so I looked down at the egg. And now this had a grease pencil. This was not chalk. This had a grease pencil. So we were under the impression that, you know, okay, we'll use the grease pencil. But, you know, the people that are at this table will be back next year anyway. So if it's permanent, who cares? We can still use it.
Okay.
I look at my egg, and my name is gone. Not only did we use a grease pencil, but I used greasy fingers, apparently, to wipe my egg clean. So I said, hey, is this an extra egg? Where's my egg?
Where's my egg?
And my wife goes, that's your egg. There's only five eggs. You know, that's it. You wiped it off with those hands, with those greasy hands. And I'm looking, I'm like, I don't feel like I'm eating with my hands. I'm using utensils. I swear, I knife, fork, and spoon. I'll even go spoon.
Maybe you just have greasy skin.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, right now, it doesn't seem
You
greasy.
Came up, you shook my hand. My hand's not all greasy.
Was it clammy?
No. No. But you do have, like, thick hands.
Do have thick hands.
You know, wide fingers. You have trouble dialing, like, little phone numbers and stuff like that?
Well, yeah, I mean.
You got, like, paws.
That's okay. You know what? I don't even know you.
Sorry.
And you're already attacking me.
I'm
just joking. The funny thing is that, I mean, I've always been kidded about my fingers. So they've been referred to as sausage-like. So I'm joking. Please believe me. Say whatever you want.
Oh, all right.
There's no filters here. No governor.
Okay.
But you know, you talk about I was just talking about this the other day, too. So I had an ear problem. Several months ago, and I went to an ear doctor for the first time, a specialist. And he says, instead of diagnosing what's wrong, because I lost 90% of my hearing in one ear.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and I'm freaking out. But his first thing is, you use Q-tips, don't you? I can't, I've lost my hearing.
Did you say what?
Yeah, I said that for 3 days. And I said, yeah, what? And he said, you use Q-tips, don't you? And I said, well, yeah. Yes, I could tell because the wax is pushed down in the back of your ear. And I said, well, was that what's causing this? Oh, not at all. I'm like, well, then why are we talking about this? you're scolding me? I have no hearing, and you're scolding me. At least I'm doing something to try to help. I said, well, then, how are we supposed to clean our ear? And has someone told Johnson & Johnson about this? Because they've only made a business for 500 years on Q-tips, but apparently this guy doesn't like them. So someone called Johnson & Johnson, tell him to stop. So he says, well, you should use your finger. And I said, hey, take a look at these. I could barely get it around the outside of my ear, Doc. You think that this little piggy's going to market? This little piggy's on the couch watching television. He's not going inside my ear canal.
Oh, my gosh.
No way. So I was.
Use your finger to pick your ear?
Yeah, he says, yeah, you can use your finger. So then I went online, and they said, well, you could possibly use some, mixture of vinegar and something else, and it helps to, it helps to melt the wax, and then you have to tilt your head. And I'm like, what hippie stuff is this? Give me. All I know is what I like about the Q-tip, you stick it in, you roll it around, you pull it out, and you see some results.
Yeah, it sounds good. It feels good.
Yeah, it feels good. And you look at that and you go, hey, that was dirty.
Now my ear's clean.
Yeah, now maybe to his point, because he went in there with his little microscope, and he even had one of those round things like Dr. Frankenstein, those doctors that used to wear those big metallic circles that the Marx Brothers used to wear in the 20s for some reason.
Are you sure he was a doctor?
Yeah, I don't know. His name was Dr. Wackenbush, so I don't know.
He's a gynecologist looking at you.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why he put me in the stirrups to check my ears. I don't understand that. I've never been to an ear doctor, so I went with it.
Okay.
But I didn't know. So he gives me this lecture about the thing, and I'm sitting there going, Doc, just... And to his credit, he did cure my problem, and I do have my hearing back, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
I had something called sudden hearing loss, which is very scary. I woke up one day and I had 90%. I just woke up and 90% of my hearing in one ear was gone, and I had this static sound, and it was very freaky. But within a couple of weeks, I did get rid of it. But I am still, regardless of his scolding,
you're going to still use a Q-tip.
I'm still using Q-tips. So Johnson & Johnson, don't worry.
Have you ever dipped them in alcohol and used it with alcohol?
No. Well, maybe
that's quite refreshing. I'll just
tell you.
Well,
to clean my tape deck, yes.
No, for your ear.
To clean the heads on my tape deck in 1977, I did that, but not my ears.
Peroxide.
Wow. Really?
That one too.
Okay, peroxide wouldn't be bad, right?
Well, no, it's crazy because it fizzles in there.
Oh, you got? Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, here, I had to cure this.
I've put a lot of things in my ears.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Wow. You weren't the class clown. You were that weird kid that ate everything.
That's right. I pulled raisins out of my ears.
Yeah, I wouldn't have talked to you.
The Play-Doh was up in my nose. Yeah, that was me.
Thank God you're up on the seventh floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
you don't
yeah,
have to smell me.
But yeah, no. So thankfully, but here's what I want to say. So to cure this, I had to get two steroid shots inside of my eardrum. And so they don't worry. It sounds a lot worse than it was. They numbed my eardrum. But what I did hear, which I wasn't expecting, the doctor never told me I was going to hear this. I heard the liquid of the injection. So all of a sudden I heard gloop, 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 gloop. And I'm like, wow, that's freaky.
Yeah. Wow.
So how about that, folks? This first half hour, look what we've touched upon already. Earwax.
Pranks.
Practical jokes. Mm-hmm. Laura Vaughn sticking things in many orifices.
Just my ear.
And it's only 2:30. What? I mean, I could stop now and it's a full show.
That's right.
But I'm going till 5 because I'm a marathon runner. So we're going to take a quick break. I am Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN 720, filling in for Matt Bubala today. Please come back. I'm coming back. I hope you will too. And it's Elton Jim back here with you on a Saturday morning. A little Elton John music from his latest album, actually. New album is called Wonderful Crazy Night. If you were not here at the top of the show around 2 o'clock, I played a practical joke, a little delayed action, April Fool's, on the audience. I actually had some people believe, and even had Laura Vaughn, who is new to at least me, at least. Yeah, I don't think she knows who the hell I am, and new to this spot of doing some news. And I had her at least fooled. I don't know about anyone else out there, but I had her fooled that I was no longer an Elton John fan. Yeah, right. I've already got ticket in hand to see Elton in April for Vegas, which will be show number 163. Thank you very much. No chances of me not being an Elton John fan. As I said in my fake admission that I was no longer an Elton John fan, I've been an Elton fan since I was like 9 years old. Still have the first vinyl 45. Remember those? The good old 45s? Everybody's into vinyl today. They're into vinyl albums. But how about the 45? Let's bring the 45 back. Let's bring the little holder, the little adapter that you stuck in the middle there. Let's bring the 45 back. I'm all for the album. I understand that. But I used to go to the store, whether it was Goldblatt's or there was a place at Six Corners in the Northwest Side where I grew up called Keys on Cicero and Irving in Milwaukee right there. There was a huge department store called Keys. And that's where I used to buy most of my 45s, although there was actually a really cool record store that was on Milwaukee right across the street from the Portage Theater. And people that live in the Portage Park area, you'll know that, the Portage Theater. It's right around the bend there on Milwaukee Avenue. And there was the coolest record store that had every record you could imagine. In fact, DJs from the city used to go in there and buy hard-to-find records because they had everything. And I bought a lot of my 45s there, too. But let's bring back the vinyl 45. Anyway, I still have my vinyl 45 of Crocodile Rock, which that's how I gauge when I became an Elton John fan, when I bought my first Elton John record. And it was Crocodile Rock in 1973. Anyway, we've got a great, you know, as usual, we're going to jam in 4 pounds of radio baloney in this 1 pound bag until 5 a.m. So hope you'll stay for the duration. A little later in the show, we're going to do another segment of Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. And we'll be talking about some of the little items in the pop culture world, entertainment. We've had a lot of deaths over this year. My goodness, so many. Prominent and well-known, some legends, have died and at a relatively young age. We've lost David Bowie, Alan Rickman. George Martin was 90, but, I mean, a huge influence on the Beatle music. In fact, if there was any fifth Beatle, and Paul McCartney even said this, if there was a fifth Beatle, a lot of people use that tag that they were the fifth Beatle. If there was a fifth Beatle, it was George Martin, and he sadly passed away. And this week, Patty Duke. Frank Sinatra Jr., which I thought, when I read the Frank Sinatra Jr. obituary, I was shocked to see that Frank Sinatra Jr. was only 72 years old. And I say that not because 72 is young or old. I say that because Frank Sinatra Jr. always seemed old to me. Even when he was young, he seemed old. He was, think about this, folks. Strap in when I tell you this. Frank Sinatra Jr. and Mick Jagger are the same age, or were the same age. They're both 72. Talk about living in two different worlds and looking at life from two different perspectives. I think Frank Sinatra Jr. was old when he was three. He was, you know, certainly born and raised under that Frank Sinatra older era. And even in his teens and 20s, he was always wearing a tuxedo. He was never wearing tie-dye. He was always wearing a tuxedo. So when I heard he was 72, I thought he was in his 80s. To think that he was born at the same time and should have been a member of the rock and roll generation, and yet he was singing all the old standards, all the songs like his father, and he was in his teens and 20s. So while you had people like the Beatles and Mick Jagger and The Who and all these guys in their 20s and 30s creating this new sensation of rock, there was Frank, same age, same generation, but he's doing Ring-a-Ding-Ding. I was shocked to see he was 72 years old. And later in the show, we're also going to talk to sports guy Mark Vasco. We're going to talk, give a little preview of the baseball season. It seems like it's been baseball season all winter. But it actually is. I remember, just think how fast February and March went by. I remember when reading in the paper, pitchers and catchers are now reporting to sunny Arizona. And now Monday is opening day. Wow. Time is flying by. And we're going to talk about, give a little preview of, do the Cubs really have a legitimate shot? They are being picked by everybody. They're on covers of Sports Illustrated. On paper, they should be a contender. But you never know. They are the Cubs. And we'll also talk a little about the Sox. Not sure what's going to happen on the South Side this year. And we'll give a little preview of the remaining games for the Blackhawks and what their chances are to defend that cup. Let's not forget, folks, I know it seems like it's been a long time, because it has. It's been since June. We are the Stanley Cup champions still, guys. I know the cup isn't here in Chicago physically, but we are the champions, my friends. And we will keep fighting till the end. We are the champions. We are the champions of the world. So it's our cup to defend. And even though we've lost one of our best players, Duncan Keith, to a suspension, and I think a well-deserved suspension, and we will talk about that. As much as I'm a Hawks fan, you have to admit what he did was a little out of bounds. But what are our chances in the playoffs and going through to the Stanley Cup, especially the first round, and at least missing Duncan Keith for one game, and he'll have been out for five. He will be well-rested, but he might be a little rusty, and there's still some questions about their goaltending. So we're all going to be drinking the Blackhawks Kool-Aid, no doubt about that, but we have to make sure that it is sweetened. Don't want sugar-free Kool-Aid for the Blackhawks. You want that original blend. So we'll talk about that. So how about the fact that Wisconsin, our friends to the north, and certainly at night here, I am told that WGN Radio expands its coverage, and we're not just a Chicago and Illinois station at this time of night, but our signal really pumps out its 50,000 watts to, I've heard the number, 37 states. You can literally go on the dial and on 720 AM in 37 states and pick up WGN. Now, obviously, in today's technology world, you can just go on WGN.com and listen to us live, and you can even watch us now. And that's why we have to actually look somewhat presentable, and we can't itch and scratch like we usually do on the radio here, because now we're being televised. But I always think there's still something more pure about listening on that radio. And what's got to be cool, if you're from the Chicago area and you know WGN, if you're driving in St. Louis or, you know, Ohio or Tennessee, or I don't know how far this thing goes, you can, from what I've been told, I haven't done it myself because I haven't been driving in those areas, but you could punch 720 and there we are. So, you know, if you're a truck driver out there somewhere, or just someone driving in the car, or you're sitting at home and you are able to get WGN in another far state, give me a call. I'd love to find out where you're at. But how funny is it now that Wisconsin, our friends to the north, and that's how I got on this subject, their primary is this Tuesday, the presidential primary, and it really means something. I mean, Wisconsin is Wisconsin, right? You know, they've got a few number of delegates, but it's never talked about as a swing state like Ohio or Florida or, you know, New Hampshire or Iowa. It's Wisconsin. It's one of the primaries. And what I find interesting is that they're now a big deal. I've got a cool call, Hill. Tell the person to hang on because I actually want to talk about what they want to talk about. So tell them to hang on. Bear with me for a second here. Because it'll all tie in. It's actually a perfect call. So I'm glad the caller called in. But so here we have Wisconsin now. Who knows? I mean, it's not going to tip the election. But what it will do, clearly, is provide some needed momentum for a number of people. If Bernie Sanders wins, it continues to legitimize his campaign, even though the chances of him becoming nominee are still slim. Given Hillary Clinton's lead in the delegate race. On the Republican side, Donald Trump has had a pretty tough week, to say the least. How was your week, folks? I don't think it's still as bad as it may have been. I don't think it compares to Donald Trump's week. And so here's a moment where Ted Cruz probably can't get to that magic number of 1237 of the delegates he needs to win the nomination at the convention outright. But, you know, his plan, as long as John Kasich's, is to stop Trump and have that open convention in July in Cleveland. And if Cruz can win Wisconsin, which it looks like, according to the polls, most of the polls right now have him at a 10-point lead, that certainly shifts some great momentum to Ted Cruz and sort of stalls the Trump train, which has been speeding down that track. He's got a huge lead in delegates, but his road to 1237 isn't completely assured yet. So Tuesday is going to be a big day in terms of momentum. And to that end, and to this caller's end too, what we don't have anymore on television are really cool theme songs. In the 60s especially, and in the 70s, and somewhere in the 80s too, and then it sort of stopped in the 90s, it seems. TV shows always had theme songs. In fact, some of the theme songs used to explain the entire show, like Gilligan's Island, and we all know the words to that. And within a two-minute theme song, you pretty much were told the entire concept of the show. And lots of shows had that. Or some other ones just had some very likable ones. You heard Dick Van Dyke. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Andy Griffith. You know, Cheers had Everybody Knows Your Name. I mean, there was just so many classic ones. You know, Get Smart, da-da-da, now. Car 54, there's a holdup in the Bronx. Brooklyn's busted out in fights. Car 54, where are you? Anyway, you get my drift. One of the great TV themes was from the TV show, The Patty Duke Show. And I was talking about some deaths, and Patty Duke passed away, and a lot of people may not know or remember who Patty Duke is. She is the mother of Sean Astin, who has been in a lot of movies, including, the Lord of the Rings movies, obviously, and others. But she was a big deal. She won an Academy Award for Miracle Worker, playing Helen Keller. But she had this great TV show in the early 60s, which had one of the great all-time TV themes. And why don't I take this call? Hey, how are you there?
Yeah, good morning. This is Mark. Let me first say hi to Laura Vaughn. This is Mark Lindsay. She'll know me from Facebook.
Oh.
I'm glad she's on the air this morning. And secondly, yes, you're right. WGN has a big footprint. And I've got to say that much as I enjoy streaming.
What happened? Did we lose him?
Never get over it. Am I still here?
Yeah, you're there. Go ahead. You faded out for a second.
Streaming. As much as I enjoy streaming, there will never be a substitute for getting a station long distance over the AM radio, and even more over the FM radio, because it doesn't happen as easily there.
But yeah, isn't that cool?
It's just so much fun.
It's real.
Yeah, exactly. It's real time. Streaming usually delays you a minute or two.
And just think about how crazy it is that there are these things called radio waves that we can't see, we can't feel, and yet they are there. We have proof that they're there.
Yeah, electromagnetic waves.
How cool. So now you were calling up about...
About Patty Duke. I wanted to mention that she was a real advocate for mental health because she suffered from bipolar disorder herself.
Yes, she... Go ahead.
I think people felt sometimes that she was a little bitchy, but she was in the throes of an illness that wasn't even diagnosed for a while. And from her early childhood, people started using her because they saw her talent. But I got to tell you, I was at the theater of Western Springs where one of the board members at the time had some kind of connection with Patty Duke. And so we were treated to a one-man play that she was doing, and we were also treated to audience dialogue. And I will never forget the gracious patience with which she answered my question. I wanted her to describe how she formed the roles of Kathy and Patty and kept them separate, because I drew an analogy that if you're in a record store, a classical section, you don't hear the rock and roll section if the soundproofing is good. And it's the same with an actor's ability to keep roles separate. And I tell you, she spent 10 minutes answering my question in detail about how she had formulated the roles of Kathy and Patty and how she had made sure that the mannerisms of one would never be the mannerisms of another. And she understood what I was getting at about the ability to keep two identities separate and how that's what separates the best actors from mediocre actors. And
well, no, you're right. I mean, that what you know, it seems like a crazy concept. It was the cousin. And she played, as you say, she played Kathy and she played Patty, and Kathy lived most everywhere. From Zanzibar to Berkeley Square. But Patty only knew the sights from a girl.
Seen the sights a girl can see from Brooklyn
Heights. What a crazy pair. Because they were cousins. Identical cousins.
Or Kathy loves to rock and roll. A hot dog makes her lose control, et cetera.
But so.
MeTV has started showing that again recently, and I try not to miss it, even though it's at 5 in the morning, because I love to watch her acting.
Yeah, well, that's to your point. I mean, don't forget, this is before CGI. And so she had to play both roles. She had to talk on a split screen, I would assume, talking to nobody and acting to herself. And one, as you said, one character was this more refined, boarding school cousin Kathy from Europe, and she was very subdued. And then Patty was this wild devil may care American teenager, and those were two very distinct personalities. And she did play both of those characters.
I'm learning that Kathy was not above a little bit of deceitfulness and trickery.
She was a little like Ethel Mertz. In that she did go along with Lucy's, as much. What I loved about Ethel was that Ethel used to talk about how harebrained Lucy was, but Ethel was involved in all of Lucy's schemes. So you can't throw.
But Anna Marie Duke, as her name really was I was just impressed with how diligent and gracious she was in answering my questions about acting.
Well, I think
she didn't act like a prima donna. She was really diligent about giving a precise answer.
Well, I mean, let's face it. She won an Academy Award. She was no slouch. And I think, sadly, due to some of her emotional problems, she had a very tough upbringing.
Yeah.
That certainly added to it. She went to different families, foster families. She was, unfortunately, like so many child actors in that time, she was taken advantage of in terms of her money. And as oddly enough, as what often happens, she had a weird kind of upbringing of her own then when she brought up her kids. I mentioned Sean Astin. Sean Astin's got the last name of Astin. People who like old TV will certainly recognize the name Astin.
We don't know who the father is.
Well, that's the thing. John Astin, who played Gomez on the Addams Family.
He played the Riddler on Batman for a while.
Yeah, he and Frank Gorshin, although John Astin was a little doughy in that in those tights. I think Frank Gorshin looked a little better in the question mark tights than John Astin did. He was a little doughy around the middle. But
John Astin was in a few Night Gallery episodes.
Oh, yeah, some great ones, too. He played a hippie one time, yeah. And but anyway, so Sean Astin, when Sean Astin was born, Patty Duke told him that this was your dad, John Astin. She was married to him. Fine. Then when he was 14, she told him, I've got some news for you. The truth of the matter is that I had an affair, get this, with Desi Arnaz Jr.
Yes.
And Lucy was not happy. And so she broke off this this little affair that we had. But I have to tell you that John Astin is not your father. Desi Arnaz Jr. is your father. So then Sean Astin, when he's 14, decides to create a relationship with Desi Arnaz Jr. As years go by, Patty comes back to Sean a third time. It's almost like one of the Stations of the Cross. Patty comes back a third time and says to him, I hate to tell you this, but Desi Arnaz Jr. is not your father. I had an affair with an actor early on who was a tenant or something, and he's your real father. And so then he forged a relationship with that guy. So as much as Patty was put through a lot of ridiculousness in her upbringing, she didn't really do much to help the situation for her own son. But it sounds like he's been able to make it through. And thank you for your call, Mark. I appreciate that. But yeah, we lost Patty Duke. She was a very good actress, and as I said, one of the great theme songs of all time on television is the Patty Duke theme. I'm going to play part of this. I'm going to have a little fun with one of the TV themes, and I'll do that on the other side of the news. But we're going to take a quick break now, and then we'll come back. And as I said, we're going to also talk with Mick Kaler in another segment of Pop Culture Club. So stick around. But right now, we're going to take a break. I'm Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN 720 AM. I'm filling in for Matt Bubala today, who's taking the morning off. And in admiration and tribute to another star that we lost over the last week or so, the great comic genius Gary Shandling, I will just say, come back, no switching. And I'm Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN, filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. It's about 11 minutes after 3. Before we get to our next segment with Mick Kaler, the ever-popular segment, I should mention, on the Elton Jim Show, the Pop Culture Club, where we wax poetic, if you will, on a variety of pop culture topics. But first, as I said before the news, it's hard not to pay attention to this this presidential campaign. I'm a political junkie. I love this stuff. Over the last several months, I have found myself watching CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News to get everything. I'm showing no biases here. And at this point, I'm not making any kind of political statements or who I'm endorsing or who I'm for, whatever. That's not what I want to get into. But I just think it's great theater, and I'm enjoying watching all of this from the standpoint of a political junkie and looking at it as just that political theater to see how everybody has ups and downs and this and that's I mean, like I said before, my gosh, Donald Trump has had a tough week this year with a series of missteps and a few controversies. But as I said about a week or so ago, or maybe actually earlier this month, I remember he had kept, for the most part, Trump came out and announced his candidacy back in June. And for the most part, his wife was in the background. And that's done for the most part. But as most campaigns go, we realize, especially if you're going to be getting close to possibly being the nominee, your family will play a role. And your wife certainly will, as she will be the first lady. And as we've seen with the Obamas, Michelle Obama and the two children have played a big role. And Michelle has certainly been out front. The first lady always picks one or two different issues or causes that she tries to promote as part of her term and tenure, because especially in today's world, the First Lady's role is not just to wave and cut ribbons. It it has some meat to it, as it should. And so the First Lady, and I wonder if they're going to change that term because it sounds a little archaic. But certainly the president's wife plays an important role in his decisions as well. And, you know, don't forget, Nancy Reagan passed away a few weeks ago. And basically the epitaph on her was the role that she played in influencing Ronald Reagan, especially in the last years of his presidency when no doubt his health was failing. And now I think with a more objective view, we can probably say that the early signs of his Alzheimer's were probably beginning to show in the last several years of his presidency. And Nancy Reagan certainly played a big role in protecting him, especially after he was shot within 2 or 3 months of his presidency starting in 1981. So Melania Trump did an interview with someone. I'm not sure who she did it with, but I saw it on television, and Melania has this very thick accent. I'm not sure where she's exactly from, but she certainly has this kind of exotic European accent. And it reminded me, when you look at Melania and Donald Trump, it reminded me of Oliver and Lisa Douglas from Green Acres. And if you remember the show Green Acres, it was about a New York lawyer and his socialite wife. And he wanted to quit the rat race and go out and to work a farm out in Hootersville. Hootersville, darling. A Screen Gems presentation, darling. And so, of course, Lisa, who is this this socialite gadabout, she wanted to stay in Manhattan and always wanted to go back and live her other lifestyle. She was not attuned to the rural life. And that was the tension, and that was the funny part of it, as well as all the crazy characters in Hootersville, or Hooterville, if you will. But when I saw this, you know, we talked earlier about the death of Patty Duke, and the Patty Duke show in the 60s had this great TV theme, and TV shows used to have these elaborate themes that either told the story of the show or he just had a very catchy melody that we've all come to know, so many of the great ones. And we don't hear TV themes anymore. I watched the show Billions that's on Showtime with Paul Giamatti. And it just when it's ready to the beginning of the show, it just says Billions. There's this chord, and that's the theme. So the art of the TV theme sadly has gone away. It was a great little piece of Americana. I hope that comes back with television, but I doubt it because of the short attention spans that we have these days. That people can't wait for a minute little theme song. But the Green Acres theme song was a classic. And it told the story of Oliver and Lisa Douglas and how they got to Hooterville. Well, when I saw Melania, and then I saw a picture of Donald and Melania together, I thought of Oliver and Lisa Douglas. And so right away, da-da-da-da-da came in my mind. And soon after that, some lyrics to a parody song came to mind, too. So here's what I like to call. Let me get rid of this first. Don't want that. Okay. So this is what I call Trump Acres. Hit at. The West Wing is the place to be. President is the job for me. A wall spreading out so far and wide. Keep the apprentice, just give me the Kelly file. Trump Tower's where I'd rather stay. I used to model every day. I just adore buying shoes. Donald, I love you, but give it to Ted Cruz. A big wall. Carnegie Hall. Little Marco. Central Parko, you are First Lady. Goodbye, Macy's. The White House, we are there. Hey.
Bravo, that was really good. That is really good.
So that's Trump Acres, if you will. I mean, really, when you take a look and you listen to Melania talk, and she's, I'm sure she's a lovely woman, and I don't want Donald Trump to start Twittering me now and attacking me the way he did Ted Cruz, because Ted Cruz or somebody in his pack that supports him said something about Melania. This was all in good fun, Donald. I know you have something of a thin skin, but I hope you can have a little fun with this. But yeah, when you see the story, think about it. Melania, if Donald Trump does become president, Melania is going to be moving into a much smaller home.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, compared to Trump Tower and Mar-a-Lago and all these different properties that Trump owns around the world, the White House looks like a condo.
It's a dump.
I want to go back. Donald! And Donald will have his, you know, Donald will be on his trailer? What's that thing called? What is a
wagon?
A wagon? No, but what is a farmer drive on?
Combine? Tractor?
A tractor. Yay. Tractor. Ding, 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 that's a tractor is the word. Laura Vaughn not only has her voice back, but also she's as sharp as a tack. Yes, a tractor. And as you said, so then we could have fun too. You know, if Ted Cruz loses, then you know, if you remember, Mr. Haney would always take advantage of Mr. Douglas, mm-hmm, because he knew he wasn't in his element, and he would sell him all this.
He wasn't very bright.
This crap. Well, he wasn't.
Or whatever.
He sold him all this crappy stuff because he was out. Like, he was just fish out of water. That was the whole concept. So you could see Ted Cruz, if Trump wins, Ted Cruz will certainly try to, you know, sabotage or just give a little, you know, little jabs at Donald. So, hey, Mr. Trump, did you want this law to pass? You know, and then let's see who could. I mean, maybe Paul Ryan could be Mr. Drucker.
Maybe.
You know, he's the Speaker of the House, so he would be like the head of the gross of the general store.
Mm-hmm.
The key is, as you said earlier,
who's the pig?
Boy, who's Arnold Ziffel? Boy, do we have a lot of possible
Ziffels.
Ziffels
out there.
Who might be?
Oh.
What's that?
Governor of New Jersey.
Perfect! Chris Christie is Arnold Ziffel. Yes. Laura, I'm so glad you came today.
Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Yes.
Excellent.
Sharp as a tack.
Yes, and, you know, because even though you're
I know, it's terrible.
No, because that's perfect, because he was one of the first former candidates to support Trump, and he's angling.
I know.
Yeah, and he's angling for VP. Some kind of a cabinet position. Attorney General or something. I don't think he'll go for a vice president, because if you do, you always want a vice president that will help deliver you a state that you can't win. And he's from New Jersey,
right,
and Trump's from New York. And so you want, you know, either someone from Florida, or that's why Kasich is always being thrown around, because he's from Ohio and that's a big swing state. But in terms of Arnold Ziffel, yes. Mm-hmm. Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding.
Excellent. So I hope you enjoyed Trump Acres, and I will certainly play that again. And as you should, and people, you should know, that was performed live, by the way. That was not on tape. So I had one take on that one.
If you give me the script, I'll do the woman part.
Oh, yeah. Well, I always, no. You know, I always love doing the woman part myself.
Oh, do you?
Oh.
This is a little secret about you.
In fact, one time, TV Land, when they first started to promote themselves, they did a tour of malls. And they had this booth where you can go in and record you singing one of the theme songs of the shows they had.
Mm-hmm.
And when the TV Land started, they showed all the old shows. Now they're showing more, you know, recent shows and even some original shows. But back then, it was all older vintage shows. And Green Acres was one of them. So my wife and I went, and we told the person who's running it, we're going to do Green Acres. And he said, oh, that's perfect, right?
Uh-huh.
What he didn't know is that I had, and you were in a booth where people can see you at the mall. And they could hear this while you're singing. So they got, you know, people walking by, you know, involved. So the guy figures, of course, I'm going to do the male voice and my wife will do the female voice. Well, he didn't know Jim Toronto, did he?
Apparently not.
So when the song starts, my wife does Oliver Douglas and I did Lisa. And everybody got a kick out of it and I enjoyed it.
Nice.
So, anyway.
Nice.
So Shantae, who is my produce today, can you hit the muse for me, please? That sound can only be one thing that ushers in our popular, ever popular segment called Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. Are you there, Mick?
Yes, I am. What's happening, man?
Okay, now you get it, Mick?
I get it.
It's pop culture, but then it's culture club.
Yes, very subtle, like a jackhammer.
And that's Mick, you see, understand, that song, that's Karma Chameleon.
Right.
That's by Culture Club.
Very pithy.
See, so it's Pop Culture Club.
Right.
You got it?
Yeah. By the way, love the Green Acres,
Diddy. Did you like it?
Building the wall thing, that was funny.
Well, I'll tell you, and that coming from you is quite a compliment, because Mick Kaler, not only being one of the more experienced radio producers here in Chicago over the last 20 years or so, having worked with Larry Lujack and Robert Murphy, and at US 99 and WCKG with some various people. In fact, I saw one of your former bosses, Stephanie Miller.
Oh, yeah.
She does a commercial now for Super Beats.
I saw that, yeah.
Was she pushing that when you worked with her?
No, but she was a big health nut.
So oh, was she?
Always, like, you know, when John Howell and I, when we worked together at WCKG with Stephanie, when we were eating, you know, big cheeseburgers and Red Mac stuff, she was having, like, you know, alfalfa sprouts.
Oh, okay. All right, so at least it's legit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's a believer.
Well, what I must say, what I was saying here is that for Mick to compliment my song, I take that as a high compliment, because what Mick has been doing over the last couple of years is writing his own set of parody songs based on different current events, and getting a lot of play, not only on some radio stations, but also on a regular basis on the WGN Morning News.
Yeah, I'm kind of a Dutch uncle to the show, which I enjoy, and my buddy Al Flash sings the songs, and we do these videos and things.
Yeah, so for you to have complimented me, I take that as a high compliment, and I've known Mick for over 30 years. We actually did college radio together. That's where we first met, back over in Elmhurst, at Elmhurst College.
Well,
good,
you
old WRSE, 88.7.
One thing I wanted to mention, you were talking about Duncan Keith earlier, and his suspension and what's happened to him at the near the end of the season, it's killed me, because I have a great Duncan Keith parody, a song parody. It's probably going to have to wait till well into the playoffs, if not next year. And when they get suspended, I'm like, Duncan, you're just slaying me. You're killing me.
Well, he's only missing one game, so it's not terrible. But, yeah, I mean, it could affect.
It puts a screw up on my plan.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that Duncan.
Ahead of time, I'm sure he wouldn't have slashed that Minnesota Wild player.
Well, I wish. Yeah, well, there's many reasons why he shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, exactly.
So, before we take a break, and we're going to be with Mick for a while here, it's actually nice at this time of the hour. We have very few commercials today, so we'll have a lot of time to talk, Mick, so don't worry about that.
Cool.
But why don't you at least, it's already 3:30 almost, and I'm going to have to break very soon, but give us a quick rundown as some of the topics that we're going to talk about today on the Pop Culture Club. By the way, it's Pop Culture Club. Did you get that?
First thing I want to talk about is these movies that are coming out about iconic music stars, Miles Davis. And I have not seen that movie yet, but I have seen the Hank Williams movie, I Saw the Light. So I wanted to cover that. And also I think we want to talk a little bit about the Ravinia schedule that's coming up this summer and Lollapalooza. So there's a bunch of things that jump on, plus whatever you want to dovetail.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about some of the just some quick old bits on some of the people that we've lost even recently.
Yeah.
I mean, George Martin, I talked a little about Patty Duke, you know, Frank Sinatra, and obviously Bowie earlier in the day. Ronnie Corbett, remember the two Ronnies?
Yeah.
On PBS?
Yeah.
Ronnie Corbett, so there's a lot. And, of course, what I really want to talk about a little in depth with you is the death, of course, of Gary Shandling, who was just, I'm just a huge, huge fan of his comedy and of his TV shows, and that was really a sad, sad loss.
You got it.
So anyway, Mick, you stay tuned. You stay there. As I say, in honor of Gary Shandling, no switching. No flipping. For radio, it's no switching.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so I'm using a little creative license there. But we're going to take a quick break here. I am Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN AM 720, filling in for Matt Bubawa this morning. I'll be here until 5 a.m. I can't believe we're already an hour and a half through this show. My gosh, I can be on for about 10 hours and still have stuff to talk about. But we'll be back right after this message. And as I say, no switching. And that's the sound of Culture Club, which, as I said, ushers in our segment called the Pop Culture Club with Mick Kaler. Mick, are you there? Is Mick there? Hello?
I was waiting to hear that bell. I didn't think you punched me in.
Okay. There you go. So anyway, this is Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN. It's about 3:36. We'll be here until 5 o'clock, and then I'm setting up the table for Orion Samuelson and Max Robinson. Max Armstrong. Max Robinson. Who's Max Robinson? Wasn't he a...
Channel 7.
That's right.
ABC Network.
No, Max Armstrong, that rascal. So the farm guys on the morning show at 5 a.m. This morning. So, Mick, let's talk pop culture.
You got it.
You said you saw one of the new, like you said, this week. Wow, what a big week for music biopics. Chet Baker, the jazz guy, and then we had Miles Davis, the blues guy, and then of course you've got the movie you saw. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I saw The Light. It's only playing in a few theaters right now. I think they're going to do wide release a little bit later this month. The first thing you have to understand, you know, Jim and I, of course, being big Elton John fans and big Springsteen fans, well, when I was 2 or 3 years old, my parents listened to Hank Williams music.
Wow.
And I knew, I always say this, and it's true, I knew Hank Williams songs before I knew nursery rhymes.
Music
and Springsteen's music, my all-time favorite singer-songwriter will always be Hank Williams. So I was really looking forward to I Saw the Light, which stars Tom Hiddleston, the guy that you know from the Thor movies.
And he really looks like Hank Williams.
He really does. And the movie is very good. I give it a strong 3 stars. It covers about 7 years of Hank's life, and it really focuses on the time when he was trying to break through in music and get on the Grand Ole Opry, and his very troubled marriage to his wife Audrey, which was a real issue and a cause of a lot of his pain, and probably the cause of some of his drinking, because his drinking was the other issue. And Tom Hiddleston does all his own singing in this movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's no lip syncing, and I mean nobody could really sound exactly like Hank, but as you said, his look is right there, and he sounds so good, and his mannerisms, you know, there's not a lot of video of Hank Williams, the real Hank Williams, but he really does have the mannerisms and the look and the moves and the approach and basically just the presence of Hank done in this movie. So if you want to know a little bit about probably the true king of country music of all time, which is Hank Williams, in my opinion, you should definitely see I Saw the Light. It's a very good movie.
Now, if I'm not a Hank Williams fan, will I appreciate it?
I think you will, and again, I know a lot about Hank's life. I've read biographies about him. This one is actually based on one of the biographies that was written about him. And the one thing that I had a little problem with the movie is they really don't go into just how bad the drinking was, as well as what's the source of that, because I don't think anybody really ever knew, you know, exactly why he was just, you know, was so compulsed to do that. He had some physical issues. He actually had spina bifida. And that caused his back problems, so that lends to, and they show that in the movie where you think, well, maybe he had so much pain, that's why he was drinking so much and abusing some painkillers. One of my favorite biopics was the one on Tina Turner, What's Love Got to Do with It? And I thought Tina's story, they told a really good story from her as a little girl all the way up to, you know, present day. Hank's, I wish, would have been a little bit more encompassing as opposed to just focusing on those 7 years at the end of his life.
Yeah, it seems like that's what a lot of these recent biographies in the films, many years ago, they would do the whole life.
Right, they kind of say this is where they started,
yeah.
How they got to where they got.
And now they seem to be choosing little segments of
right.
the life in order to give it, I guess, a little more heft so you don't need to speed through,
right?
Which makes sense. But at the same time, as you said, then you do leave out some either important, you know, moments as to that influenced the behavior you're seeing now.
Exactly. In fact, I believe the Miles Davis movie is pretty much the same way. It takes this little chunk of his life and focuses, from what I've read, mostly on just that piece, as opposed to, like you said, when you're younger, what got you to be the way you are, et cetera. But like I said, that, I saw the light. The theater was packed that I saw it. It was a small theater, but it was young people and, you know, people of older age, too, that really wanted to see what this guy was all about. And he's really something. And of course, like I said, I've just been a huge fan of his music forever and always will be. And I was still very happy with the way it came out.
And, of course, most people will know the name of Hank Williams because of his son, Hank Williams Jr.
Exactly.
Bo Cephas. And he was... Not only was he one of the first kind of country music guys 15, 20, 30 years ago to cross over and be a little more mainstream, but of course he really kicked it into the pop culture world when he did the theme to Monday Night Football.
Right, and that he crossed over that way and then was an icon just from that state, you know, that part of his life. But Hank Jr.'s music is great, too, and he's taken his father's music and then moved it into his, you know, more southern rock kind of way, which is great, too.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see as the years go on here. We're going to see biography movies. You know, as you get older, you know, the people that you grew up with, obviously, get older and pass away and they become iconic. And, you know, when we were growing up, we saw these movies about, you know, Glenn Miller,
right,
or some of these other people that we never knew. And they seem so distant. And even like, you know, Lou Gehrig, one of the greatest biographies in terms of movies, even though I don't know how accurate it was in terms of history, but one of the great films, of course, is Pride of the Yankees with Gary Cooper as Lou Gehrig. But it'll be interesting now because we will know, like, there, you know, there's going to be a David Bowie biography somewhere or a Bob Dylan biography at some movie at some time. And so these are people that grew up within our lifetime. We know the story. We experienced it. And so it's going to be interesting because before those movies, you know, those older movies that were biographies, the people of the time knew those characters, but we didn't. So we just sort of took that as fact. And then later on, you found out that they sort of fudged with the truth. So it'll be interesting now, as you said, you will, with this, for instance, you're a big fan of Hank Williams. So you probably know a lot of the background. And so now you go, oh, well, they didn't do that or they missed that. It'll be interesting how we begin to react to the biographies, films of our icons.
Yeah, of our contemporaries. In fact, as you mentioned that, as far as, you know, future movies, Jim, if there's got to be a great story told, it's got to be the Elton John story. I mean, the Elton Jim story would be a good one, too. Don't get me wrong.
Well, we're still writing that one.
I've seen the inner workings of the Elton Jim story, and trust me, it's like going into the Amazon. The deeper you go in, the more you want to get out. But seriously, Elton John, I mean, you know, from English obscurity with the issues with his father growing up to superstardom to coming out in the mid-70s as bisexual to his marriage, divorce, drug, alcohol issues, all that, that's like a miniseries.
Well, you know, it's funny. Over about 2 years ago, there was a big stories that there was a film in production called Rocket Man.
Yeah,
not surprisingly.
That.
And Tom Hardy, who's a great actor,
right?
He was attached to it, and he was gonna, like you were just saying, that this actor did all the singing, his own singing. Tom Hardy was going to do his own singing, and he was a little afraid of that because it's pretty hard. You know, Elton John has one of those voices that is not easy to recreate.
Right, you can't mimic that.
Yeah, and so he was a little worried about that. But I think the movie now has been put into turnaround, put on the shelf for the reason, and I wasn't surprised when I was hearing it, because to your point, his story certainly does have all the dramatic turns that a very good movie and certainly a very good biography film would have. It has all the elements, just like you said. What they were trying to do with this script was to give it a treatment like, you remember Moulin Rouge?
Right.
Where it was kind of over the top.
Yeah, kind of fantasy.
Very big fantasy. It used elements of reality, you know, the whole Paris scene and the Moulin Rouge and Toulouse-Lautrec. But at the same time, it took great liberties and it really just, you know, it was hyperbole. It just expanded and overdid everything. It was a really big, fun as you said, fantasy film. I don't know how accurate it was.
Right.
And so they, you know, Elton loved Moulin Rouge apparently, and if you remember, your song played a pivotal role in that film.
Mm-hmm.
His song, and so that was where they were going. Instead of doing a very straight kind of biopic.
Right. This is the way it was.
Yeah, they wanted to have a, you know, not play by the exact rules of the story. And from what I've heard from people who saw the script, so you tell me if this would have been interesting or over the top or just plain crazy. And right now, musicals, you know, the musical was very hot a few years ago. And then, it, you know, Jersey Boys didn't do so well. And a lot of those pure musicals didn't do well. And that's all it takes for Hollywood just to start to do a quick pivot.
Yeah, it scares them off.
Yeah, so I think that's why this had some initial interest when the musical was on the front burner, and then when that sort of cooled, then the interest in this cooled. But apparently, and this wasn't going to cover his whole life either, but the first scene of the film, and once again we're talking about fantasy here, but this is the track they were going, the first scene of the film apparently was the Elton John character dressed in his Donald Duck outfit walking into rehab.
There you go.
And saying, I need help. Now,
right.
I don't.
There's the whole rehab thing. There's the whole issue of losing his pal, John Lennon.
Yeah, and I mean, the rehab, you know,
Versace
the rehab.
And Princess Diana.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a ton to tell there.
Oh, there's a lot of material. In fact, you know, he did rehab here in the Chicago area.
Right, exactly.
You know, at Lutheran General. It was a Parkside clinic there that
exactly.
was the only, at the time, he had alcohol, drugs, and bulimia.
Yeah, so
and,
this is.
And that was the only clinic in the United States who would be willing to tackle someone with all three of those problems.
It's like, you got a full plate there, mister. We got to take you to only one specific place to get you treated. You know,
speaking of Elton, I don't want to always dominate this with Elton, but I do have to mention something very quickly because I'm a part of pop culture in a sense here. I will always defend Elton when I feel that he has been wronged. And I defended him. There's a music magazine called Uncut Magazine. And it's a British magazine. And a few issues ago, they did a feature about the top 200 rock albums of all time. And anytime you make a list, you know, it's impossible.
Right.
So they had the top 200 albums of all time and not one Elton John album in there.
No Goodbye Yellow Brick Road.
No Captain Fantastic. No Madman. No Tumbleweed Connection. And so, and they had seven David Bowie albums. And this came out before Bowie died. And I'm like, you know, come on. And there were some albums that, you know, no one even heard of because they wanted this to be like some really cool hipster list, you know.
Well, that's what a lot of those lists are like.
Yeah.
People want to show how much they know or how deep their knowledge
is. Yeah.
Is.
So I was very upset. And so I wrote a letter to the editor, damn it.
There you go.
And they printed it.
Angry old man.
Yeah. In my day, we didn't have these punk rock albums that no one ever heard of making top 10 lists, you know, but so I was very upset. So I wrote a letter and I was surprised because in the letter, I not only condemned them for leaving Elton out,
mm-hmm.
but I also condemned the British press to some extent because I believe that Elton has got a really bad rap in the British press his whole career because he came to the United States to become a star.
Yeah.
He became an overnight sensation by coming to the United States and playing at the Troubadour Club in L.A. And he was in England for years. His first album, two albums came out, and the English press did not care about him. And then he came to America and became a superstar overnight, literally.
Right.
And so
England,
I said...
And England, I think, kind of had that, you know, the British press kind of had their nose up in the air about it. Then. Like,
yeah.
Oh, well, you might be good enough for United States, you know, in America and all that, but forget it.
Well, I always thought that they had a grudge because, you know, he went over there and became a star. And it's like, hey, guys, get over it. You had them under your noses, and you didn't see it, and America did. And meanwhile, while you were trying to make, you know, legends out of Mark Bolan and T-Rex, Elton was over here conquering the world.
And you missed the boat.
Yeah, so get over it. It's been 40 years, and give the guy some due. And that was basically the theme of my letter, and they printed it. And so you could see that letter. If you there's not many bookstores left, unfortunately.
No kidding.
But if you do go to Barnes & Noble or some of the bigger bookstores that have really good magazine sections that have several racks and Barnes & Noble is the one that I know. There may be others, but if there's a favorite bookstore that you still go to and has a very comprehensive magazine rack, look for the April issue of Uncut Magazine. Bruce Springsteen's on the cover, which is kind of nice, too, because I'm a huge Springsteen fan. And if you go on page, I believe it's 121 and 122, my letter is there.
Perfect.
Yeah, so check that out. But what I also wanted to talk to you about, Mick, since we're talking about music here, we've had a few very sad and but you know deaths of people that really made a difference, and one of them is George Martin from the Beatles, the producer. And
yeah,
you know, I don't know how much, you know, this is one of these things too where, you know, you don't know. Here's a guy that had an amazing, I mean, you cannot underestimate and underappreciate the role that George Martin played in the success of the Beatles. And yet I wonder, the average person, aside from people like you and me or other people that are really into music, you know, did people really know and appreciate George Martin, do you think?
I think that a lot of people look, you know, who aren't into the full, like you said, the full scope of the story of the Beatles, they'll see pictures of George and they'll be like, well, who's that old guy with those four mop tops? You know, is he the guy that pushes the buttons or runs the tape recorder when they record their music? And all you have to do is look at a documentary like The Complete Beatles or any of the other ones that have been done over the years to see, like you said, without George Martin, the Beatles would not have been the Beatles, because he was the producer who said, well, yeah, why not try that? Or how about let's do this? He was the guy that thought outside the box like the band did and brought them, you know, to where they were. And I think Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr, since they're still the surviving Beatles left, I think they'd say the same thing. It's like without George, it doesn't happen.
Well, not only did he do some thinking out of the box for them, but I think what he also helped do was interpret or help create what they wanted to do.
You know, he was a great collaborator. It wasn't just like, I'm the boss or you should do this.
Yeah, but I mean,
let me augment you.
You know, because, you know, Paul McCartney, and I believe John Lennon as well, I don't think they I know Paul McCartney does not read music.
Right.
And I don't think Lennon did too. I think his mom taught him how to play the banjo, and so I think they were both self-taught. And so I think where George Martin came into, not only was he able to say, hey, let's try this, and he also wrote, you know, some of the orchestral arrangements for Eleanor Rigby and Yesterday. But I think when Lennon or McCartney said, geez, I'd like to have a sound like this, or I'd like the song to do this, and they couldn't speak in the musical terms.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't speak to an orchestra or to a musician about what they wanted in terms of, you know, the musical terms. They would sort of talk about it in just, I want it to sound like this or something. And George Martin was able to take those fragments of creativity and ideas and then speak the language of a trained musician, which he was, and then bring those to life.
Well, as you're bringing that up, he was like a translator.
Yeah.
I remember the actual stories of Paul was watching, I think it was for Penny Lane, when he heard the piccolo trumpet, he heard the sound on TV on some show, and George's like, oh, that's a piccolo trumpet. Yeah, we could do that in a song. And
yeah,
he was the one that facilitated that. Like I said, he was a collaborator that brought, you know, so much good out of them, and like you said, translated the thoughts and ideas to, this is how you want to do this, give this a try. And again, that's why you've got the Beatles as they are.
Yeah, listen to especially, you know, Sgt. Pepper or Abbey Road, some of the later albums, and you'll really hear a lot of the creativity as the Beatles began to push the envelope. As Mick said, he helped push that envelope for them by translating that. And one of the great stories, of course, is the song on Sgt. Pepper, being for the benefit of Mr. Kite. There's this swirling organ sound in there that gives that carnival atmosphere, which what the song is about. It was based on a poster promoting a carnival. And the story that's told is this, once again, this is in the days before computers and before it's easy to edit things and Pro Tools and all these gizmos that they have now in the studio. And to create this kind of psychedelic sound, George Martin knew what the Beatles wanted, wasn't sure how to do it. And then he talked to his engineer and he said, you know what? Cut up all the tape of this organ solo, and we're going to throw it on the floor, and we're going to pick it up randomly, and we're just going to We're going to tape it together. And how it plays is going to be what we do.
And that's creativity at its best.
Yeah.
Of just, let's just see what happens.
Yeah, so that's the cool part of rock and roll. And George Martin certainly deserves some credit and some recognition. So if you're a Beatle fan, please go back. And you know, we have this amazing tool called the Internet, and we're using it for such stupid things. And it's there to do research and to learn. And here's a perfect example. Go back, learn about George Martin. Go online, hit George Martin, learn about what he did. And you can go to YouTube and hear the songs. I mean, it's all there. And I hope you do that, because there are so many talented people that are going to beginning to pass away here. And their work is going to be talked about. And it's up to us to keep that stuff alive. So,
like you said, understand the depth of why things happen. It isn't just, well, I had this idea. It's like, well, who helped you with this, or who collaborated? And the last thing I wanted to say about George Martin, Jim, is I always think of him, especially after watching some of these biographies and reading things about the Beatles over the years, while most producers or engineers or music executives would say, well, why do this or why do that? He would always say, well, why not do this?
Exactly.
Why not do that?
And that's why that music was so far so ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you hang on, Mick? If you can hang on, we'll talk to you after the news. Is that okay?
You got it.
Okay, great. We're going to take a quick break here. I'm Elton Jim Toronto. I'm filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. I'll be here for another hour or so. Are you there, Mick?
Hello.
There you are. Wow, that was weird.
I sure hope you're not working the silos at the nuclear facility.
Hey, I didn't touch anything.
Hey, what's that key do? Let me turn this.
I didn't touch anything. I had my nice music playing, and all of a sudden, Kristen Decker's voice starts popping out of nowhere. It's all of a sudden, bring every pot down on the board. Anyway, let's get back to your little, here, just to show you the wizard of music that I am here. Whoa, what's that? Yeah, what a wizard. Nice wizard. Here we go. There you go. The best part is it's 4 a.m. and it doesn't matter. But anyway, here, this is our continuing of the segment of the Pop Culture Club. You get it, Mick? It's Pop Culture, and then it's Culture Club. This is Karma Chameleon by Pop Culture.
I finally picked up on it.
You got that.
Yeah.
I'm Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN. It's about 9 minutes after 4 a.m. We're here till 5, and then setting the table for, as I said earlier, good old Orion and Max Armstrong, that radio rascal. So, Mick, we talked a little bit about George Martin, and I don't know if this is something in the pop culture world. I don't know how aware of this you are. I'm going to throw this one at you.
Okay.
Because this one made me sad, and this is a news item that I've been waiting for, not waiting for with bated breath, but just expecting to come sooner than it did. So I'm going to see if this landed on your radar screen. Mother Angelica died. Does that mean anything to you?
No, it doesn't.
You know who Mother Angelica is?
No.
Okay. The EWTN network. Remember the nun that had the brown?
Oh, yeah. The very elderly nun with the glasses.
She had the glasses. She had the brown, habit.
Right.
And she would always talk about Jesus and Our Lady. And and she would take phone calls, and she would say, "You don't understand. Jesus loves you so much that
she always wore not like really a black habit.
No,
it was
brown.
A brown one,
yeah.
Right?
Jesus loves you.
I remember.
And all you have to do is follow his commandments, and the gates of heaven will be open for you. Can we take a call? Hello, caller." And she used to take calls.
Yeah.
She founded that EWTN, which I think means Eternal Word Television Network or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the Catholic channel. So
okay.
Whenever they're – now, I know you're not Catholic, but for those of us who are Catholics, either practicing or fallen, I loved watching Mother because she just – she certainly had the faith, and she – she defended it, and she promoted it, and she had some She was a tough broad. I mean, she started this cable network in Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And this became is a worldwide thing. And she started this little thing, you know, out in the South at the early days of cable. And who would have thought that an elderly nun would be such an attraction? But she was. She was a big deal, and she was a superstar in terms of that world. And what I used to get a kick out of watching her, and then there was another show called Web of Faith, and they had these two priests would take questions from the internet. And I always got a kick out of that one, too.
I never saw that one. Now when did Sister Angelica die?
Mother. Sir, would
mother,
you get...
Yes, I know. I know. My Catholic protocol's all messed up. I apologize.
Would you get your titles correct?
Right. So when did Mother Angelica...
Mother died this week. I don't know what day, what paper this was, but I just tore out her obituary. I'm not sure exactly what day. But she has been sick. She's been off the air for several years, more than I would think, 5 or 6 or almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a major stroke. And so I was wondering, I've always said to my wife, I wonder when Mother's going to die.
Nice.
Well, just because she really was very sick. And, mm-hmm. and you know, and all of a sudden, you know, she just was not there. They would play reruns, but she wasn't there anymore. And you could feel the channel was different. The only time that I would...
Took over her spot then, right?
Well, no, they didn't have another mother waiting. You know, they didn't go to the bullpen.
Okay, they didn't have a sidekick or a guest host?
Yeah, there was no wacky neighbor. the wacky priest.
Or like Spinal Tap, you know, you're replacing drummers. You know?
Yeah, you know. But they always did refer to her. And the most of the times when I would watch this is when there was some kind of big event, like, you know, when the Pope died or when they were voting for a new Pope. I'd always go to EWTN because they were that was their Super Bowl.
Right, exactly. This is like big stuff for them to cover and talk about.
Yeah, but Mother Angelica was another one who had a very tough upbringing, and she talked about that, and she went into the convent, and she was a feisty lady, and you had to admire her faith and her ambition and her stubbornness, and she put... She put together a global cable network, and that's saying something. And
absolutely.
But the sad part was, so when she first got this this stroke, you know, you never know. A lot of times, people can rehab from a stroke, and so they did. They were acting. The people at EWTN were acting like the Blackhawks when a good player gets hurt.
Yeah.
They, you know, she had a stroke. Very serious, debilitating stroke, but they just said she had an upper body injury. You know, I mean, they wouldn't really admit how serious it was.
Yeah, how she's probably not coming back on, and it's a very grave situation.
Exactly,
right?
And, you know, and this station, I don't know how much, but I think they were also dependent on people donating.
Yeah.
And so they certainly, you know, they didn't want to lose her because she was such a magnetic character there, and she's what brought people to that station, and she was why people watched. And so they brought her back. And do you remember the one season when on The Sopranos when Tony Soprano's mother passed away?
Mm-hmm.
But for like one or two episodes of the next season, they sort of electronically had her living.
Right. They kind of prolonged her and kept her going.
Yeah, and they sort of spliced together old clips of her, and they had her mouth moving, and they used old voices, you know, voice, and they clipped things together. Do you remember how weird that looked?
Right.
Well, they did that with Mother.
Oh, wow.
For a while, and it almost looked like Clutch Cargo.
Okay, I was just going to say they could just superimpose the mouth.
Yeah, it was very, and I was just like, please let the woman just go.
Right.
You know? But I was very sad to read that when Mother Angelica passed away. I did watch her I watched her for a little more than entertainment value than I guess for what she was really saying. But I always admired her her gutsiness. So Mick, once again, go on YouTube, and I want you to look at some Mother Angelica clips.
We mentioned earlier about, you know, that she's, you know, at the, you know, talking about getting to the pearly gates. And I always think of the Jim Gaffigan joke where he's talking about heaven and he says, What kind of place is heaven if you've got to have gates and a fence to keep people out?
Well, do you ever watch, I don't watch this show, but I do, as I said earlier in the show, I really love all the political shows. And on Sunday, I mean, I'm just from, you know, 9 a.m. until, you know, 1 p.m, I'm watching all the Meet the Presses and George Stephanopoulos's and Face the Nations and you name it. And so I DVR them because some of them are on at the same time. Well, after the George Stephanopoulos show on Channel 7 at 10 o'clock, at 11, there's this guy, Joel Osteen.
Yeah.
You know who he is?
Right, and I've read a lot about him, and I saw the feature on CBS Sunday Morning last week on him.
Yeah, right. They did a big story on him, which that's another great show that I always watch Sunday morning. And he's this young guy. He's a nice-looking guy, and he's, you know, he's got this amazing following. He's a minister of some sort. I'm not sure what affiliation he is religiously, but, I mean, he fills a 40,000-seat arena.
Yep.
Every week. It's a sight to see. Once again, you can agree or disagree with his methods or what he does or what he preaches, but you can't deny that the guy is connecting with somebody, and you have to give him his props.
Right. He puts fannies in the seats.
Yeah.
I love him, yeah.
But what I love about this show is, a lot of times, I never watch it, but when the DVR tapes, it always tapes a couple minutes after, you know, your intended show. So after Stephanopoulos is this Joel Osteen show. So I always get the first 2 or 3 minutes of his show, you know, when I'm recording.
Right.
You got to watch this. Watch it tomorrow morning, the beginning at 11 o'clock, because the show starts, and he welcomes everybody, and he says, and if you're ever in the Houston area, please come down, and we'll certainly make you feel welcome. And then he says, I usually like to start with something funny. And then he tells these jokes that really border on misogyny. I don't know how he gets away with it. Maybe it's that smile, but he tells these jokes. They're like these old jokes that Buddy Hackett would tell about mother-in-laws and women. And I mean, he told this one, he goes, what did he tell? How did it? God, I'm trying to remember. He goes, but he always starts off, every show starts the same. He welcomes you. He says, if you're in the Houston area, please come down. We'll make you feel comfortable. And then he says, I always like to start with something funny. And then he tells the joke. And then after that, he tells everybody to raise their Bible. He says, this is my Bible. I am what it says I am. I have what it says I have. And he goes through this whole thing. They're all doing that. But he tells these jokes, and they show the crowd, and they don't know if they should laugh.
Right, because he's trying to loosen them up.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, aren't I in church right now?
Yeah, but they're really kind of like, ooh. like, should we laugh at that?
I've never watched much of his show, even though I've seen him on different shows being interviewed. So I'll have to look for that and see if he's got a funny thing happened to me on the way to the church today.
Yeah, you got it. Just do it. Just watch it. You'll get a kick because he goes, I always like to start with something funny. And he's that exact line, and then he goes into these jokes. But the one part that I like about it is, you know, no one tells jokes anymore.
Right.
You don't hear those kind of, you know, set up punchline jokes. Everything's observational now, you know.
Yeah, so, exactly. There's not a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah,
it's
so
just kind of riff, yeah.
From an entertainment standpoint, I'm enjoying Joel Osteen not for his uplifting messages, but I wait every week for his bad, corny jokes.
Now, does he come out with a violin and say, take my wife, please?
Oh, I'm okay today, but I was tough tomorrow. That's the, my wife,
rough shape.
Was a two-bagger. She was so ugly, you put a bag over your face in case the bag over her face breaks.
I'll have to watch it for that. But like, yeah. Like I said, I saw the thing on CBS Sunday morning last week, which I found very interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that his father was a preacher, which sort of makes sense.
Right.
He went into the family business.
Yeah. And he didn't want to, and then he finally says, well, maybe I'll give this a shot, because he was helping his dad produce the show. So.
Well, let's see. Should I be a multimillionaire, or should I not?
Well, the other thing I found interesting is where they said, you know, because whenever you see these people with these mega churches and these church leaders and things, you think, oh, my God, they're making all this money. And apparently, according to him, he makes his from the books.
Right.
And the appearances, the public appearances, not the church thing, and then everything else goes to his, you know,
yeah,
church plan or program, et cetera.
No, he's done fine. And he can tell a joke pretty well, I got to say.
Okay.
I like his delivery. I usually like to start with something funny.
Shecky Osteen.
Yeah. Groucho Osteen.
That's right. Say the secret voice. Get to heaven.
So this week, or I believe it was the beginning of this week or early last week, Chicago gets on the map at least once a year nationally for music. Actually, twice a year, because the Pitchfork Festival now has become pretty big.
Yeah.
And pretty cool and pretty hip, and that's based here in Chicago. But, of course, world-renowned Lollapalooza here in our old Grant Park. It's been expanded to 4 days.
4 days of music.
And so who are some of the bands that we know, and who are those most of those bands, Mick, that we have never heard of?
Okay, well, we've got Radiohead, you know, and Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, they're back, huh?
Lana Del Rey and Future.
Okay, okay.
Jane's Addiction.
I don't even know who's Future.
Just another artist, okay.
Oh, is that a guy?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a guy?
Yeah.
Is it the Future or Future?
Just Future.
Okay, it's like
Jane's Addiction is reforming because it's like the 25th anniversary of Lollapalooza. And as you said, it's 4 days this year, Jim. And I've had this cell line that I've tried to pitch to Lollapalooza for their 4 days to put on their T-shirts. They haven't gone with it, and I'm kind of ticked off. Lollapalooza, come for the unknown bands, stay for the B.O.
That should at least be on a bumper sticker.
Well, it's funny because I watch it.
Or a hemp tattoo.
Exactly. I watch the crowds come in, and I think that is the very last place. If you find me there, it means I'm dead, okay, because I would never go.
Yeah, I've never been to Lolla. I may be showing my age. There certainly have been bands. I mean, Paul McCartney was there last year. So
exactly. And they do get some. Lady Gaga's played it.
But even
those big names.
But even this is not an age thing.
No.
Even when I was in my 20s, I didn't go to
the World Series of Rock. Yeah. With all day sitting out in the sun with a bunch of sweaty, stinky people.
I just never got into that. The outdoor. First of all, I mean, today at least they have really done a good job with the sound.
Right.
20 or 30 years ago, when you went to an outdoor concert, especially in a ballpark or some big open space, the sound was horrendous.
Yeah.
Now at least they have perfected that. But I just never got. It's more of an event than it is for music. When I go to a concert, I like to hear the music. I get into the performance. I don't get into all the dancing. And all the jumping in the mud. I've missed out, I guess, on a lot of free love. I guess, what am I going to say? I have.
I just like.
But I'll take that. What am I going to do?
I like a seat. I like indoor plumbing. I'm big on that. And the thing is, though, the funny thing
Boy, are you an elitist.
Yeah, I know. I'm a snob. I'm an aristocrat. But the truth is, I really do admire the enthusiasm of the people of all ages that go to that.
Exactly. I'm not putting it down. It's just not for me. But I think it's great. I mean, those people, they're out there every night, every day and every night, and it's hot and it's rainy. And they're out there having a good time, and more power to them. That's fantastic. I just don't think it's a place for me.
No, it's not for me either. And like I said, I watch those crowds. Like I said, now it's 4 days of, unknown bands and BO and body piercings and all that. And it's like, okay, that's their thing. That ain't my thing.
So aside from like a Radiohead and Chili Peppers and Jane's Addiction, are there any other big names?
Jim, you've never heard of St. Lucia. You've never heard of Alessia Cara, Lindsey Stirling, Seven Lions, Marion Hill, Flatbush Zombies. You haven't heard of these. Where have you been?
Well, I'm a huge Flatbush Zombie fan. We sound like Steve Allen making fun of Little Richard right now.
Well, it's
Bebopalula, she's my baby.
A few years ago.
A womp bopaluba, a womp bam boom.
I know, and we sound old, but here's the deal. A couple years ago, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel went out to, I think, Coachella, where they were making up band names and talking
Exactly, and they wouldn't even know the difference.
Right, they're like, oh, what do you think happened since Joey Johnson left the Potato Heads? Are they going to still be good? Oh, yeah, they're still a great band, and they're just making things up. Somebody has to do that at Lollapalooza and just make up names and stories, and then, hey, so-and-so's been added to the bill. Oh, that'll be great, because people just fall right into it.
Well, like I said, it's an event, it's a gathering. The music, for the most part, I think is kind of is background noise of just being there and hanging out.
It's happening. Actually, one artist who's there besides the big ones that I mentioned that I really do like. I don't know if you're familiar with Leon Bridges. No, seriously, Leon Bridges.
I don't know.
He's kind of like he sounds like kind of a young Sam Cooke.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And he's been on Saturday Night Live. I've actually gotten into a bit of his music.
Wow. Well, that's...
But again, look at that music. It's like it kind of brings me back to as I was growing up and hearing stuff from the 60s and 70s and all that.
So I'm...
And he's going to be playing there too, and that actually would be cool. But again, I'm not going to sit out in the mud and the dirt and the filth for 4 days.
So that extra day isn't doing it for you either.
No, it didn't sell me. I got to be honest.
And we got to mention very quickly here. Some good names at Ravinia, some historic names. Bob Dylan for the first time since 1964.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I'm going to try to get to definitely is Brian Ferry at Ravinia.
Yeah, isn't that something?
How cool. You know he's going to do some Roxy Music stuff, but even his solo stuff. The king of cool.
Right.
It's going to be interesting. I think, I don't know if he's in there in June or July or August, but there's a guy who looks like he never sweats, but he might sweat outside at Ravinia.
Yeah, depending on the weather, right.
And I just want to mention one quick one. This week, some rock royalty coming to Chicago. David Gilmour of Pink Floyd.
Yeah, the United Center.
Yeah, he's doing two shows, the 4th and the 8th at the United Center, and one that I'm keeping my fingers crossed and hopefully trying to get a ticket to. He's playing a show at the Auditorium in between those two shows.
Wow, that's quite a
difference. Oh, that's good. I mean, the acoustics at the Auditorium is one of the great theaters in the country, folks. It's got some of the best acoustics. It's a historic theater, Louis Sullivan architecture, beautiful theater, great sound. And to see someone like David Gilmour, I'm hoping to sneak in there somehow. I'm going to distract one of the ushers or something, but I definitely want to see because I know he's playing some Pink Floyd stuff in addition to his own stuff.
Well, the one thing I wanted to mention quickly about not only David Gilmour, but the Ravinia shows, Jim, we were talking earlier about the passings of the David Bowies, and we've mentioned in the past Glenn Frey and all these people that are leaving us in the late, their late 60s, early 70s. I don't want to scare people, but you better go see Bob Dylan and Paul Simon and Fogerty and all these people because you know what? Nobody lasts forever.
Yeah.
And it's like, even if you've seen them before, you're like, well, I'd like to see so-and-so one more time. I mean, it always broke my heart that I never saw Roy Orbison sing live. Okay?
I did. I saw him I saw him one time before he passed away.
Well, I'll catch him next time he comes to town.
Right.
And like I said, with the Ravinia shows and any of these artists that are getting up into their 60s and their 70s, whether it's The Who or, like I said, Paul Simon or these other artists, you better see him because all of a sudden one day you're going to look at TMZ and it's going to say so-and-so's dead. And you're like, oh, wait a minute, I never did get to see that act live.
No
so
kidding.
Please enjoy him now.
Well, thank you so much, Mick, for spending some time on this segment of Pop Culture Club. Always interesting, always fun. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Get that Mark Vasco on. I love that sports guy.
Ah, very good. We'll take a quick break. I'm Elton Jim Toronto here at WGN. We'll be right back. And it's Elton Jim, Toronto here at WGN, filling in for Matt Bubala this morning, been on since 2 o'clock. It's about 4:38, so we've got about 20 minutes to go before I hand it off and set the table for the morning show with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong, that radio rascal. Hopefully I'll be able to talk to Orion, do a little crosstalk with him before. I haven't spoken to Orion in quite a long time, always. Found it a great honor and privilege to work with Orion here when we were on in the afternoons, and he was a part of the show. It was always a great honor. The guy's a legend, and always fun to talk to Orion, so hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to him before we leave. But right now, we're going to talk to Mark Vasco. Sports guy. Are you there, Mark? Hello, Mark.
Hello.
Hey, there he is. So, Mark Vasco... Give us your resume.
Well, it all started at a 41 radio station.
But sports anchor, sports caster, sports play-by-play guy for who? The Joliet Jammers?
Slammers, you're close.
Slammers, Jammers,
yeah.
Wallabalammers?
Jammer was the mascot, but that's okay. let's see. This will be my 15th year broadcasting minor league baseball. I did Kane County for 5. Let's see, Cook County, which is now Windy City, for 2. This will be my 7th or 8th year, I guess, now in Joliet. So,
wow.
And then up the dial, I mean, BDM, The Score, all over the place.
Oh, yeah, sure, definitely.
Yeah, been knocking around for a while.
Well, you're also a noted Cub fan, and so that's why I wanted to talk to you this morning, because it just seemed like yesterday that pitchers and catchers were reporting to, you know, Florida and Arizona for
right.
spring training, and you look at the calendar, and Monday is opening day.
Thank goodness.
Wow. And I we'll talk a little bit about the Sox, but you and I are both Cub fans. I was born on the Northwest side. I literally grew up a couple of blocks off of Addison, maybe about 5 miles from Wrigley. I mean, when I was 11 or 12, I remember in sixth grade, I think we skipped school and took a bus to the Cub opener.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I am a Cub fan on both sides of my family for three generations.
Wow.
So. And my grandmother used to live in that high rise, those little bits of high rises at Clark and Irving.
Yeah.
My grandmother used to live there.
Wow, nice.
So a visit to my grandma's house was really cool because it always included a Cub game. We would, you know, back in the day, it was like we would go and see my grandma on Ladies' Day.
Right. Yeah, remember Ladies' Day?
And walk the four blocks, literally, from her apartment.
Oh, gosh.
To the ballpark, and we used to be. It was great because we could park at her apartment building.
Remember Ladies' Day?
Oh yeah,
yeah. They were. Wasn't it like half price or something?
It was a great thing, man.
Yeah, gosh, could you believe that? That's hilarious.
Well, that's the amazing thing about how far it's come when you think about when we were kids.
That's what I mean.
Because back in the day, when we would go, I mean, there was never a question of a sellout. The only question was whether or not they would open the upper deck.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Oh, and how about? There was two times, especially throughout the most of the 70s and even the early 80s, but definitely during the 70s, during the Jim Marshall managers and the Dave Rosello second baseman period, the Pat Burke first baseman.
Oh, boy.
Well, there's the Gene Heiser years, if you will. In early April, and especially, you knew when school started. Because once school started, Wrigley Field was empty. I mean, there was nobody there. So it was clear that it was kids and families going. And then once school started back then it used to start in September, and that place was a cemetery, both on the field and in the stands.
Well, it's so funny because not too long ago, I was talking to somebody about Dave Kingman.
Oh, Kong.
And so I went. The beautiful thing about YouTube is you can find everything on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
So there was the one home run that he hit.
Oh, he hit that thing off of way. The thing was bouncing.
That it went across the street.
Unbelievable.
The third house down, like Kenmore or whatever
yeah.
it was.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Well, it's on. If you can actually find that on YouTube. But what I noticed was there was nobody in the ballpark.
No, I said there was nobody there. People, you know, people that are in their 20s or 30s, they think that neighborhood has always looked like that, and they think that field has always been a big frat party, you know, filled to the gills. That place was a morgue for decades.
You never had to think about getting a ticket.
No,
at that time.
You never had to
for the Cub game. Okay,
you never had to think about sitting three rows from the field.
Oh, I know. I know. Used to go to all the Sunday doubleheaders too.
I mean, and think about it, the back then the bleachers used to cost like a buck. That was that was considered the worst seat. Now it's like $70.
I know.
Best seat. That since it was so far from the field, that was considered the worst seat. That's where all the deadbeats and all the the bust outs would go because it was a buck and they drink beer and just get drunk.
Well, see, now I was thinking about that because now, I mean, obviously this season they have a chance to be really special. But the problem is no one's going to be able to get in to see it.
Oh, I know. Have you read? So tell us a little about, I mean, I want to certainly talk about their chances as a team, but can you expand a little? This week there was some interesting news about the physical plant of Wrigley. And it's never easy to get in there regardless.
Well, no. Well, I was actually talking more about ticket prices because they've priced everybody out.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've been waiting for this day for 107 years.
So exactly. So now it's finally a chance for them maybe to do something special. Well, I'm only going to be able to watch it on television.
Yeah.
Because I can't pay. I mean, it's $50 is the medium range ticket to get in.
Yeah. I'm really shocked. I mean, a Cub ticket used to be very affordable. It really was. And it's funny to see, as I said, to see the bleachers. But what I was talking about, I don't know if you heard about
Oh, right. No, absolutely.
But
I've done all sorts of work. I mean, well, I'm going to miss the McDonald's, I can tell you that.
Yeah, the McDonald's is gone, huh?
I know.
Is it gone? I saw a picture in the paper. It doesn't even, you can see all the way down the street. There's no buildings anywhere.
Yeah. No, it's gone. It's completely gone.
So that whole street is empty.
Yep, that's all a big one construction fence.
So they even got rid of that makeshift
right,
a memorabilia store too?
Right. Yep.
Wow.
It's all
Yeah, I haven't been down there since all that's happened, and I know they're going to get the marquee back on, but apparently Cub fans, they're going to be opening up for 7 o'clock games. They're going to be opening up the field early at about 4:30 because there is going to be a much stricter entrance for tickets and with metal detectors and security, and it's always tough to get into Wrigley Field anyway.
Well, and now, like you say, it's all under construction. The 7-Eleven's gone.
The donut place is gone, right?
Yeah, it's either gone.
Is the Big Macaroni gone? You know that bad. The last couple of years they had that Big Macaroni there for the mac and cheese thing.
Yes, thank goodness that's gone.
Yeah.
I was not a big fan of that.
Yeah, no, but I mean, what's going to be cool? I mean, especially for those of us who have been at Wrigley, going there for 20 or 30 or 40 years, scarily. I mean, that in another 5 or 6 years, that's going to be incredible to see.
Oh, it is. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait. But in the meantime, right now it's a construction zone.
Yeah, well, that's the way it was. If you watched the Ten Commandments last week, it's not easy to build a city. Okay? It takes a while to get those pylons and those obelisks up. So, it takes a little manpower.
Especially in Chicago.
Yeah, they didn't, in Ten Commandments, Moses didn't build Goshen in a day.
No, he did not.
No. But apparently they've built a lot of the stuff underground with the clubhouse and all that. But Wrigley Field certainly in the next couple, 3 or 4 years is going to be a completely different experience. And it's already, a cool place to visit, but it's going to really be a very dynamic area of the city, which, like I said, it already is. It's just going to be even more. But
I am happy for the players because that was an embarrassment of a locker room.
Oh yeah,
I mean, literally, high school locker rooms were bigger than that.
So,
Cubs.
So, as a Cub fan, and we don't have all that much time, but as a Cub fan, can you believe that you're really saying with legitimacy that the Cubs are a World Series contender? That's not just drinking the Cubs Kool-Aid. That's legit.
Well, I was looking at the lineup. I mean, Kyle Schwarber is going to bat sixth. Addison Russell's going to bat seventh. Now, think of any other lineup in the majors where Schwarber would bat sixth and Russell would bat seventh, which tells you how good their lineup is. That's why it's not a joke.
Yeah, I mean, and then they've strengthened the pitching rotation. That's a formidable pitching rotation.
Well, they have. Well, not just, well, absolutely. But, and then think about the other thing is, Baez starts off on a DL, but he's going to come back, in like a week. And Soler, they have Baez and Soler who can't even get into the starting lineup.
Right.
And they'd be starting for anybody else. They basically have 10 starters for 8 positions.
Man. This is a team that you can honestly say, aside from all the usual spring training, preseason optimism. I mean, don't get me wrong. People have to have very good years. We had some amazing career seasons from Jake Arrieta. Look at the way Bryant came out of the box as a rookie. That he had a great season for a 15-year veteran.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of people. Rizzo certainly has to continue. Hayward is a great acquisition. Lester continue hopefully, and now Lackey. I mean, they've got the pieces there. But at the same time, the Cardinals are definitely weakened, and the Cubs helped weaken them.
Exactly, and they're not too happy about that.
Yeah, but at the same time, they are still the champs, and they still have to be beaten. But I'll tell you, this is the first time in my lifetime when I can honestly say, I mean, I remember, you know, in 84, the year that they lost, and then the next year there was so much hope, and that season quickly with injuries became a disaster in 85. But this year with the youth and the talent and Madden, and it's just it feels legit. It feels real. It feels like the Cubs are a true contender. And to say that, if you've been a longtime Cub fan,
right,
without, you know, either you know, a smirk or some ridiculous pie in the sky optimism, is really it's an oddity.
Well, I was actually looking back at the 69 Cubs. That's how far back I'm going to go. If you look at this year's roster and look at how many guys are all-stars or you think will be all-stars, I mean, there's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a high number. How many players on the 1969 Cubs, take a guess, were or would eventually be all-stars, would you guess?
Oh, the 69 Cub? They had, I would say 5 to 6.
12.
Well, they've got four or five Hall of Famers.
Well, exactly.
And they still never won.
That's how good that team was. I went back and looked at it. There were 12
That's amazing.
Players on that roster.
Yeah, the Cubs
were or would be all-stars.
The Cubs used to always have a lot of all-stars. It was always this great dichotomy that they had all these all-stars and never did anything.
Right. But that's why they were in first place for all of that time.
Yeah.
You know, before, you know, they fell apart.
So, I mean, very.
That was not a freak. But I'm saying this. But if you compare that roster to this, there could be, you know, legitimately 8 or 9 all-stars before these guys are done with their careers. Legitimately.
So, very quickly, be honest now. How many victories you think? They had 97 last year. What do you think they get this year?
97 is hard. I mean, they could actually be a better team and not win 97, if that makes any sense.
Oh, definitely. That's what I was wondering. Where do you think they were?
I'm going to say 94.
Okay.
Because it's not going to be a big drop-off. It's
right.
Just that's just a hard number to get back to.
And real quick now, Duncan Keith with the Blackhawks.
Oh, my.
You know, gets a 6-game suspension, the first game of the playoffs, whoever that may be against. We lose him. I believe it was deserved. In fact, I think he got off lucky and got off soft. Right. Because I believe if he had done what he did and swung his stick at that player purely out of revenge and vindictiveness, if that's January and that happens, I bet you he's suspended for 10 to 12 games.
Well, he's lucky that only it was a bloody nose that came out of it.
Oh, yeah, that guy could have really been seriously injured, if not even worse.
There's no question.
For what he did. So what do you think? We've got Corey Crawford with a mysterious upper body injury, which everybody says is either vertigo or something else. We've got Patrick Kane cooling off a little. We've got Duncan Keith out, and yet we are the defending champs. What do you think the chances are?
Oh, I still think they're good. I mean, from what I hear, Crawford's coming back for the first round of the playoffs, whatever this is. The upper body, I mean, you know, which is all the way up to the very top, as in the scalp, probably.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I think the Blackhawks, they always go through these kind of late season swoons, you know, and they do have a new lineup. I mean, Stan Bowman went crazy at the trading deadline and really changed up the lineup in some key spots. So hopefully a lot of that's going to gel. I'm still hoping that they go deep in the playoffs. It's never easy to repeat, as they've learned each time.
But they're going to do it. I just think there's too much talent. Again, I think, as I told you the last time I was out with you, they've played more hockey games than any other team in the NHL in the last 6 years.
Yeah.
And that takes its toll. There's going to be dog days. You can't get up for every single one, but they will.
Yeah. And I really do love when they turn a switch in the playoffs, and hopefully without Keith, at least for only one game it is, but it's really fun to watch them play in the playoffs. They really become a real good hockey team. It's really fun to watch.
I can't wait for the games to matter, and that's going to be very soon. So.
Well, Mark Vasco, it's always fun to talk to you. I appreciate your insight into the Cubs. We're diehard Cub fans. This is the year, pal. This is the year. Hey, it's Mark Vasco. Hey. So we're going to keep the faith, and hopefully come October we will see those brown vines in the World Series.
I'm all for that.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining me, Mark. I appreciate you staying up.
Thank you.
Take care. Mark Vasco, you'll hear his voice around the town here in Chicago. My name is Elton Jim Toronto. I'm filling in for Matt Bubala this morning. We're going to take a quick break, be back, and hopefully we'll be able to chat with Orion before we pass it on to him and Max Armstrong, that radio rascal, right here at WGN. And it's Elton Jim Toronto back here at WGN. Final couple of minutes here on the show. I hope you enjoyed it. I've been on since 2 a.m. filling in for Matt Bubala, and I'll be passing it on to, what can you say, except the legend of Chicago radio and a legend of WGN, good old Orion Samuelson. Are you there, Orion?
Well, good morning, Elton Jim. What a stranger. I haven't talked to you for a few years,
I know.
Welcome back.
It is so great to talk to you, Orion, as I said, to when you were a part of the afternoon show a couple years ago.
Right.
It was a daily privilege and honor to share a studio and share a mic, and it's great to hear your voice. How you feeling?
Feeling fine. Celebrated number 82 on Thursday.
Whoa, all right.
Speaking right along.
Excellent.
Of course, we're here in the desert. I've heard you talking baseball, and
they
have had one of the best snowbird seasons for baseball spring training, according to my restaurant friends out here, in 5 years. And the traffic and the restaurants, if you don't have reservations, you're going to have a long wait. But, of course, this weekend, the exodus has started.
Oh, has it really? Yeah, can you tell?
Yeah, oh yeah, you can tell. The traffic is beginning to lighten up a little bit, and restaurants still busy, but the exodus starts when spring season ends, and it's been quite a season. As a matter of fact, the big talk was the first Cubs exhibition game of the spring at Wrigley West.
Right.
An all-time record for attendance at an exhibition baseball game here in the desert.
Yeah, I've watched a few of those games on television, and the place looks just jammed. It's unbelievable that you wouldn't even know that it's a spring training game.
No, and it had the atmosphere of World Series almost.
You know, one thing I do want to talk to you about, we're going to be passing it on to you and Max Armstrong, that radio rascal.
Rascal, yes.
The Saturday morning show with Orion and Max. But before that, I just got to ask you, because you are a noted Republican, right? You wear that.
Well, yeah.
You wear that badge proudly, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask you, get it real quick, what are you making of this crazy campaign this year?
I have voted in every presidential election since the 50s when I voted for Dwight Eisenhower for president. This will be the most difficult election for president I will ever be involved in. I may have to write in Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse.
Wow. Okay, Orion. So there's you're certainly making it. You're making your point without saying anything. Which is a true diplomat. That's why you've been around this long, Orion. You know how to say something without saying it.
I have been practicing for a long time. So,
well, I want to tell you, it is so great to talk to you. I hope your wife, Gloria, is doing well.
She is doing very. I call her my health warden. She makes sure I do what I should do, pushes me when I need it, and says back off when I need it. So,
well,
she's my health warden.
She's obviously doing a great job. It's great to hear your voice. Glad to hear you're doing well, and Godspeed, and we'll be listening to you with Max Armstrong right after the news, so take care.
Thank you very much, Elton. Good to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. I am wrapping it up here. My name is Elton Jim Toronto. I've had a ball the last 3 hours, jamming 4 pounds of radio baloney into a one-pound bag. I hope you've enjoyed it as well, and hopefully we'll talk soon. Thanks to my guests, Mick Kaler and Mark Vasco, for adding their expertise into the fun, and I hope you enjoyed my Trump Acres song, too.
Hopefully, it was awesome.
Hopefully we'll be able to play that soon. A wall spreading out so far and wide.
Very well written, man. Just really.
Well, thank you. And nice to meet you, Laura, and nice to work with you.